Yesterday, why did they say sale or purchase? And, okay, so I found out from Nora. The reason.
Right. Let's get this committee convened. This is the Wednesday, March 11th, 2015 meeting of the Transportation and Public Safety Committee. Members, we have four bills on the agenda. We don't quite yet have a quorum, but I'm sure we will momentarily. When we do, I will say so, and then we'll be able to take action on the matters before us. We'll start with Senate File 898, Senator Schmidt. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. We do have an A4 amendment for this bill, and I don't know if we want to get that on the table right away.
You're up to four version.
Oh, pardon me?
Fourth version of
the
an
fourth
amendment.
Version, believe it or not. This is an iterative process, I understand.
Sounds like there's been some conversations occurring. All right. Senator Schmidt offers a author's amendment, the A4.
And I should add, Mr. Chair, I just received note, we would like to add an oral amendment to that amendment. So however you'd like to proceed, it just deals with, this is not an A5, it's an A4. An oral amendment to the A4, however you'd like to proceed.
Yeah,
it deals with dates.
We'll have you make that amendment to the amendment before we take up the amendments. Looks like we need to make copies. Oh, wait a minute. We're just locating the amendment. Pay no attention.
Thank you.
So we'll wait for the amendment to come around to everyone. So, Senator Schmidt, looks like everyone who's here has it. Why don't you go ahead and make the modification to the A4, right, and then we'll adopt it.
Mr. Chair, the oral amendment that we'd be proposing would be on lines 1.11 to strike January, replace it with August, so that it would read transportation policy by August 15th, 2016, and present an interim report by March 15th, 2016. So just giving a little additional time for the final product with an interim report in the process.
And what about this date up here?
Council?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I just wondered if the date on 1.4 then should be changed, because by that date, the standards are supposed to be adopted already, and then we're having an interim report that comes in after the standards are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would stand corrected there. I think that would be consistent with what we're talking about here, to change line 1.4 accordingly.
To August.
Okay, so we'll change 1.4 and 1.11 to August. So August 1st on 1.4 and August 15th on 1.1.
Perhaps we could be consistent, Mr. Chair, and say August 15th in both occasions.
Okay, August 15th in both occasions. And then what was the other thing?
There's an interim report by March something. I didn't catch the date.
Okay. And then, I'm sorry, can you restate your amendment on 1.11?
So for line 1.11, it would read the entirety of the line, transportation policy by August 15th, 2016, comma, and present an interim report by March 15th of 2016.
All right. Does everyone understand the amendment as modified by Senator Schmidt? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. All right, Senator Schmidt.
All right, to the bill, Mr. Chair. Well, just a little background here. Currently, there are two sets of design standards for roads receiving state and federal funding. First, guidance that MnDOT uses for the design of a trunk highway system. And then secondly, state rules that govern the design of county and state roads. In the past few years, more cities and counties are requesting a variance from state aid rules, and many ask to use MnDOT guidance instead. These variance requests concern width of travel lanes, parking lanes, shoulders, design speed, etc. In 2013 and 2014, there were 52 such requests for a variance from state aid rule, and all were granted. Cities and counties asked to use MnDOT standards to save money, prevent the taking of homes, commercial property, preserve community character, provide safe accommodation for all users, and for other reasons as well. While the state rules include a process for cities and counties to apply for a variance from the state aid standards. Applying for a variance can be costly in terms of staff and consultant time, and it requires jurisdictions to travel to and from the metro area to attend a meeting of the variance committee. The committee itself meets about four times a year. So that's the impetus for this. There's been a lot of discussion, obviously, with the iterative process, the A4 amendment we offered. And this language reflects, I guess, peace in the valley between county engineers and also MnDOT and other stakeholders. So we feel pretty good about this language. If you'd like to hear some additional testimony, we'd be happy to provide it.
Great. Thank you. Quorum is present. Mr. Foley, did you want to testify?
My name is Ethan Foley. I'm here as a volunteer today for the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. I've been involved with the state aid process for about 5 years, and I'm just here in case there are any technical questions that might come up.
All right. Thank you. We do have folks on the list. Senator Schmidt, I will take your lead. Do we want them to come forward and provide testimony, or are they simply here to respond to questions?
You know, Mr. Chair and committee, if folks are comfortable with this language that we're presenting, I'm happy to move forward if you'd like.
Great.
The testimony, of course, is available if folks have questions.
Questions from the committee. Senator Sendrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Senator Smith, for bringing it forward. I'll have to admit, though, I'm still trying to figure this bill out from the standpoint of what we're hoping to accomplish here. I can understand cities and counties may have differences with respect to the street characteristics. We used to have them relative to municipal state aid speed limits, actually, in our city. We thought they were too slow, but I think these are design characteristics. And so if we adopt this, how will things change?
Senator Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Sendrum. Great question. You know, I would just hearken back to my opening statement here. Currently, there are two different sets of design standards for roads that receive state and federal funding. One, of course, is the guidance that MnDOT uses for its design of trunk highway system, and the second is those governed by state rules for the design of state and county roads. And so what we're trying to do is provide some uniformity here, and there's two separate tracks. We'd like to have some conformity. Given the increase in variance requests over the last several years, I think we see a great interest throughout the state in having some additional flexibility at the local level, and that's what we're trying to achieve here.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sendrum.
So a design standard has to do with the characteristics, the physical characteristics of the road. I can't describe them, but I suspect how many inches of concrete or asphalt or whatever those characteristics are. And so occasionally a city you're suggesting may seek a variance on whatever those characteristics are, maybe even width, I don't know. And so if we do this, is it automatically granted, or is it just, does this bill just entertain a conversation? I guess that's the question.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sendrum, you know, I'll just quickly mention that what this bill tries to do is react to increase in variances that have become commonplace and are typically granted. And so there's a reality that's changing in terms of our engineering. But given your questions, Mr. Chair, perhaps we could hear a little testimony here to offer a little more detail behind this. I'm not the expert, and so perhaps we can answer some of these questions.
And expert Foley.
Yeah, Chair and Senator Sendrum, to kind of build off of that a little bit, and it kind of aligns with the testimony that from MnDOT and Hennepin County coming up, is that recently MnDOT has adjusted their standards after a couple long year process to be more in line with national standards. That means that now MnDOT standards provide more flexibility in a lot of areas than the state aid standards. And so that's part of what's working on here. Those changes were part of basically an evolution in understanding around safety and road design that's coming out of a new research that's available. But I know that Jim Rosenau from MnDOT can really speak in more detail to those issues.
Okay.
All right. Did you want to hear anything further, or is that
I'm learning.
All right. So did you want to hear more from Mr. Rose now, or are you?
Well, that would be helpful, yes.
All right, great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd suggest maybe we get testimony from MnDOT here just to clarify the matter.
Thanks. All right. Mr. Rose now, if I could invite you forward. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for having me.
So probably heard the general gist of the inquiry, the design standards that we have available for trunk highways, and then our opportunity here to develop some consistency between those roads that are supported through the state aid program and the standards that we've established for those facilities that are owned by the state. And our opportunity here to have a conversation between local engineers and folks at MnDOT to maybe create some consistency across those systems. So,
would you like me to just go into the process we went through in Trunk Highway to modify the standards?
That would be sure.
My name is Jim Rosenau. I'm the design flexibility engineer for MnDOT. Also have a role in complete streets implementation within the agency, and also serve as the vice chair of the AASHTO Technical Committee on Geometric Design. AASHTO is the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials, and the AASHTO Technical Committee on Geometric Design is also known as the AASHTO Green Book Committee. So if people have heard of the Green Book, an AASHTO publication that governs road and street design practices and policies throughout the country, is adopted by many localities and by the Federal Highway Administration. So I've got a role in road design and design flexibility both on the local and national level. The process that we went through within MnDOT really started with a recognition of a couple of things. Recognition that the design standards that we were using on the state level were out of alignment with the national policy and criteria that can be found in the Green Book. And also the realization that it was costing us, our relatively conservative and inflexible standards were costing us opportunities to have better projects, in a manner of speaking. Projects that we felt we could be more economical, more context sensitive, more reasonable and practical, and increase the functionality of the system, which is where Complete Streets comes in. A lot of it does have to do with the specified widths of roadways, and opportunities for flexibility on those widths does allow us to incorporate additional function into existing widths of rights of way and of streets. So we recognized that there was merit in pursuing more flexibility. We recognized that the longstanding supposition that conservative design standards compared to national standards were commonly believed to be a virtue, and that had fallen into question within the last several years, whether they actually were a virtue to have something more conservative and less flexible. Realized that in order to have these reasonable and practical and context-sensitive and economical solutions, that we would have to adopt additional flexibility. So we set out to do that in late 2010, concluded at the end of 2012. It was a two-year-long process, and the scope of the process was to modify our design standards for what's known as the 13 critical elements, sometimes known as the 13 controlling criteria. Those are 13 design criteria, different design dimensions on roadways, that have been prioritized by the Federal Highway Administration as being important enough that going below minimum values for those dimensions requires formal written documentation, otherwise known as a design standard, similar to a variance in the state aid system. The goal of the process was basically to take MnDOT standards and align them with AASHTO standards, bringing them into alignment both in terms of minimum design values as well as flexible ranges that the Green Book provides. The Green Book flexibility is actually fairly long-standing. A lot of the flexibilities that are in there recognized have been around since the first edition of the Green Book in 1984. Even so, it's taken the engineering community and the road design industry as a whole quite a while to embrace the flexibility that it was even in the earlier editions of the Green Book. As Ethan and others may have mentioned, even more recently, within the last 10, 15, 20 years, there's been a great deal of applied research that has taught us a whole lot more about the relationship of geometric design elements to safety and other functionalities. In some cases, it's much different than what we used to think. In some cases, it's completely the opposite of what we used to think. And in many cases, as is the case with a lot of things, the more we find out, the less we realize we know. And so there's a lot of a lot of in design flexibility, it allows you greater freedom to do what you need to do. At the same time, it also opens the door to a lot of judgment, a lot of analysis. And that is the design environment, the flexible design environment. It's a thinking person's design process. It's heavy on analysis, heavy on consideration, and allows consideration of many more things, including multiple modes, including context sensitivity. That's sort of a broad overview.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm going to be just a little more specific in my question because the language here, and I have to really appreciate that we have someone here from the Bicycle Coalition. I drive on Jackson coming into the Capitol, and so there's a bike lane there, and I've never seen a bike, but I have seen cars, and it's been a real challenge to try and make a right turn at the end, and other cars are there. And so some of these things come through and sound real simple, but in practice, you know, mixing those two together can be that. But in the language of your amendment here, the A4 amendment, it talks about the standards must align the state aid standards with the Department of Transportation trunk highway standards. I'm not quite sure what those are. But then also a very vague, I think, appropriate technical memoranda. Can you tell me what appropriate technical memoranda is?
Mr. I happen to have them with me right here. What they are, these are the series of technical memoranda that the committee that I was a member of that did these revisions to the trunk highway standards that we produced in order to reset these design standards. So some of the revisions to MnDOT standards were done as revisions to our official road design manual and just incorporated directly into the manual. But most of the revisions we made were done by technical memorandum, which allowed us a couple of things, including the ability to basically write more about the subject matter, including the background of why what we were doing was okay and supported by science. It allowed us basically to do more writing in the technical memorandums than we would be able to do. So expository composition to help people understand a little bit more than if we just laid down the law in the road design manual. So it was a series of technical memos that supersede the road design manual guidance and eventually will be incorporated into the road design manual.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to have one more. That's interesting. It takes a lot to make the world go round or to drive on it. So the other one is context sensitive. Can you give us a better idea of what that means?
Mr. Rosenau.
If I were the context sensitive design leader, solutions leader within MnDOT, I could probably give you a better explanation for what that is. He can produce it fairly rote. Essentially what it is, it's an approach to road and street design that takes into account more than what engineering typically has taken into account, which are traffic functionalities, safety, takes into account communities, stakeholders, people who have an interest, not just in the function of the roadway, but what the roadway does to their communities, in terms of social, environmental, economic impacts. It's a broader look using the project development process at trying to find an overall best solution that not only works for the user, the through user, but also works for the local community.
So, Mr. Rosenau, we were in Albert Lea a few weeks ago. The committee was down there for a field hearing, and the local officials there talked a lot about Trunk Highway 65 that comes through the heart of the Central Business District in Albert Lea. And what they're hoping is that rather than, you know, the full lane widths and, you know, the full design, you know, as the highway appears a mile outside of town, can be somewhat different as it comes through the heart of town. You know, so folks can cross the street, so businesses can continue to be viable and vibrant without a lot of cars speeding past. That tends to have a negative effect on the viability of businesses as well as residences when there's a lot of fast traffic going in front of it. Would the flexibility and design standards for the trunk highway system allow for some of those kinds of changes?
Absolutely, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All right. Anything further, committee? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize. I'm still trying to catch up on the concept of this. So let's say we have a county highway, and the standard says you can have so many stoplights every so often, and the city or school district or somebody wants a variance to that to say we need them closer together, so to speak. How does this affect that? Does it make it easier for those community design changes to happen? Or, you know, it's so often that we hear from, and I'm not picking on MnDOT, but what we hear so often from MnDOT is, well, that's the standard. This is what we do for consistency everywhere, and you have to live with it.
Mr. Rosenau.
Just for starters, the changes that we're talking about here that we've made or could be made to state aid standards are design dimensions of the streets and roads, so it wouldn't specifically govern traffic signal warrants or traffic signal spacing. But in a larger sense, you've put your finger on it, really, and that is even within the design flexibility that we've created on the trunk highway system, we make a whole lot more possible in terms of solutions than used to be possible, at least without going outside the design standards. It used to require a design exception to go below a 12-foot lane, and now we've aligned with AASHTO, which allows down to a 10-foot lane, particularly in low-speed situations. That's one example of it. And even with the current flexible standards that align with the AASHTO Green Book, we can still have design exceptions on the trunk highway system that go below those or outside those ranges. So we like to tell people that design flexibility is a matter of two things. One is more flexible standard ranges, but also additional flexibility to even go outside those ranges as necessary in order to have the best solution.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Anything further, members?
No, right. Mr. Chair, in the spirit of continuous improvement, it was just brought to my attention that we might rephrase line 1.8, dealing with the technical memoranda that Senator Kiffmeyer brought to our attention, and we could strike the word appropriate in line 1.8, and then following the word memoranda, insert a comma as appropriate. So it would read trunk highway standards and technical memoranda as appropriate.
All right. So Senator Kent, who, by the way, made the original motion on the A4, we'll move that change to the delete all. Strike appropriate on 1.8 and insert as appropriate before the sentence. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed no. Motion carries. All right. Anything further, committee? Thanks. Senator Sendrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would either the authors be able to comment on this? On lines 116 and 28, it refers to for projects in urban areas. And maybe this is also a question for counsel. Do our statutes
Senator Sendrum, we're working off the A4. We're working off the A4 delete all.
We're still on that one.
It's a delete all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Delete everything. All right. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I'm just making sure the committee's on its toes today.
This is a work in progress. All right. I'm making all right. progress.
All right.
All right.
Very good.
Question not needed.
All right. Very good. Anything further? All right. Senator Kent, why don't you make the final motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that the Senate File 898 as amended be
recommended pass go to the floor.
Recommended to pass to the floor.
Great. Any questions? Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 898? Ms. Lesh.
Thanks, sir.
Mr. Chair, apologies. I'm Melissa Lesh with the City of Minneapolis. Just because you made the motion for it to go to the floor, otherwise we would have waited. We did get some suggestions just from our Public Works Department on just some very specific technical language that we thought would be beneficial to the bill and going forward. On lines 1.7, afterwards standards, the suggestion is to insert the word "and guidelines." Apparently, technically, some of the language is not a standard. It's actually just referred to as a guideline. So that would be on line 1.5 after the word standards, on line 1.7 after the word standards, and on 1.9, I believe, after the word standards, that we would suggest inserting "and guidelines" because they're not all apparently standards.
Right. Okay, so we'll suspend on the motion to send the amendment to the floor. Anything else, Ms. Lesh?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, inserting the word "and guidelines" in those three places. Senator Kent will make that motion. I'll, or Senator Champion?
Yes.
He wants to make that motion.
Yeah,
or do you have
I'll
a
make
question?
The motion.
All right, Senator Champion makes the
motion.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Oh, that was just on the amendment.
Oh, that was just on the amendment. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
All right. Returning to the
I'll
motion.
Stay here all day if you like.
Returning to the motion to send it to the floor as amended. All favor say aye.
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 Okay, thank you. Thanks.
I like that. In a file 1525.
Go ahead.
The miscellaneous provisions pertaining to the Department of Transportation, an agency bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you
well,
for com-
welcome to your
thank
own
you
committee.
Committee for considering passage of this bill, Senate File 1525. This bill is a MnDOT. We like to refer to it as a housekeeping bill, but it includes technical provisions for the Department of Transportation. It clarifies that road authorities have the authority to issue drainage permits within the city, within the limits of a city. It also clarifies the requirements for award of a contract with a target group business goal when the bidder fails to meet the goal. It also talks about the turn back of Highway 275 and creates a pilot program for using an administrative law judge instead of commissioners for deciding eminent domain cases. Finally, it provides authority for creating the Oberstar Memorial Bikeway. In order to walk you through the bill, I now refer to Eric Rudine, who's from MnDOT, or the Minnesota Department of Transportation, to walk through the bill.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Rudine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudine with MnDOT Government Affairs. I do have one handout.
All right. Send a page up to the table.
So, Mr. Chair, I'll just briefly walk through the bill, provision by provision, and provide an overview. Section 1 of the bill amends Minnesota Statute 160.20 to clarify that road authorities have the authority to issue drainage permits within the limits of a city. Other section of statute give road authorities power to maintain public ditches, regardless of whether the ditch is in a city boundary or not. And under common law, MnDOT has power to issue permits for all actions that impact real estate under the department's control. However, we feel it's important to just clarify this issue so that there's no question that we do have authority to issue drainage permits within the limits of a city. Sections 2 through 5 of the bill designate the Oberstar Memorial Bikeway. This would be a bicycle route that would start in St. Paul, go through Duluth, and terminate at the Canadian border north of Grand Marais. The department is finishing up its work on the Mississippi River Trail, which has been a very successful effort to establish the first state bikeway. And this route for the Oberstar Bikeway has been identified by bicycle advocates and through the statewide bicycle system plan as a priority for the next state bike route. And, of course, you are all familiar with Congressman Oberstar, who represented Minnesota's 8th Congressional District from 1975 to 2001. And he was an avid bicyclist and advocated for bicycle infrastructure in federal transportation legislation, including the creation of the Safe Routes to School program. Sections 6, 7, and 8 of the bill clarify the requirements for award of a contract with a targeted group business goal when the bidder fails to meet that goal. The current language is ambiguous because although it grants the commissioner authority to set contract goals as a condition of award, it allows MnDOT to require a demonstration of good faith efforts to meet the project goals and allows MnDOT to grant waivers from the subcontracting requirement when qualified small target group businesses are not reasonably available. So this language has been confusing to some because it sort of suggests that there are two different processes, one for good faith effort and one for the waiver request. But in practice, the program requires that a bidder who fails to meet the goal apply for the waiver, and then in order to receive the waiver, the bidder must demonstrate good faith efforts to meet the goal. If they, after demonstrating good faith efforts, they're unable to find sufficient businesses to participate, then MnDOT will determine that the firms are not reasonably available and grant a waiver. There's also a reference in the bill in Section 8 that MnDOT will adopt the rules of the Department of Administration. The problem is that the admin rules are not consistent with the MnDOT Targeted Group Business Program, and the admin rules also prescribe sanctions for contractors. However, admin has not been invoking those sanctions, nor does MnDOT. I should mention, Mr. Chair, that we were contacted yesterday by an interested party who had some concerns with the way the language in these sections was written, and so we're in the process of trying to work through those issues. I don't think we have full agreement today, but just wanted to get that on the record and commit that the department is willing to talk to this interested party and attempt. We think we can take some of the suggested changes that he's brought forward, perhaps not all of them, but probably need some more time to work through that issue.
So, Mr. Rudine, I know this is going to judiciary, but I think those are probably matters for the Transportation Committee to consider. When do you think you'll have that?
Mr. Chair, as I said, we were just contacted yesterday, and he emailed us some language at about 8 p.m. last night.
All right.
So our staff hasn't had time to work through all of those suggestions that he's brought forward. I would think within hopefully a day or two we would be able to.
Okay. Should we just lay this bill on the table and bring it back up then when those issues are, that discussion is completed?
Mr. Chair, if you'd prefer to do that, that would be fine. I can, if you'd like, I could finish.
Yeah, why don't you finish the presentation? We'll have some discussion. We'll lay the bill on the table if you don't mind, Senator Champion. All right. Great.
I don't mind.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomason.
I think I heard your witness say that Congressman Oberstar served until 2001, but it was
right.
2010.
2010.
Oh, I apologize.
All right. For the record.
I know it's too quick.
The record is corrected. All right.
And I'm not sure the trail should go through Chisago County either. That's where his opponent was from, but anyway.
Mr. Right. Chairman.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
I on the very last page, it's in regards to the alternative damages, Section 10.
Senator Kiffmeyer, why don't we let Mr. Rudine finish the presentation? He hasn't gotten to that section yet,
okay,
and then we'll get to questions. Thanks.
Judiciary, not that hearing.
Oh, we're going to lay it on the table. We're going to lay this bill on the table and come back to it after the presentation. We'll have some, we'll have the finish the presentation, and we'll have discussion, and then we'll lay the bill on the table. Mr. Rudine.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 9 of the bill allows MnDOT to turn Highway 275 over to Lackey Parle County. And as you know, all trunk highways are listed in statute. So in order to turn a highway over to a local government, we have to ask the legislature to repeal or modify the route description and statute. And actually, the plan in this case is to do a swap with Lackey Parle County. Highway 275 carries about 500 vehicles per day, but there's a county state aid highway, and on the back of the handout you have, there's a map that shows county state aid highway 25, and that road has a higher traffic count of about 1,500 vehicles per day. It also carries more truck traffic, and so both MnDOT and the county feel it's appropriate to basically do a swap where we'll take over the county highway and then they'll take over what's currently a trunk highway. And you have also the resolution from the county board in support of this action. Section 10 of the bill establishes a pilot program for up to five projects to use an administrative law judge instead of commissioners for deciding eminent domain cases. All the other eminent domain proceedings would follow current statutory requirements. Currently, three disinterested commissioners are appointed by the court to determine compensation. And we're hoping that this proposal would bring more formality and efficiency into the process. We think that perhaps we could get more consistency with the use of administrative law judges, and there hopefully would be some streamlining due to better coordination and reduced time to decide these cases. So, Mr. Chair, that's a brief overview of the provisions of the bill. We'd be happy to have to answer any questions.
And Mr. Rudine, on Section 10, that's – pardon me if you've already said this. Is this a little bit of a – like a pilot project? We'll try this on five processes and see how it works, and then if it works well, take it to scale, as it were?
Right. Mr. Chair, that's correct. It's a pilot program for five transportation projects, and if it works well, then we would likely be back here to expand the authority, but we would have to come back to the legislature after those five projects.
Great. Thank you. Senator Kipar.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my question. Was it a kind of an odd ending date, but it didn't specifically say, so I understand that now. The other thing, though, is when you go to the administrative law judge, there's usually fees to be heard or payment in some way. I did not see anything here except a reference to Chapter 14. So are the costs of going to the administrative law judge covered by that, or is there something needed here?
Mr. Rudy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, yes, the Chapter 14 spells out the procedures for how those costs would be paid, and because this is a MnDOT-initiated action, those costs would be borne by the department.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Questions, members? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Rudine. In regards to Section 10, is that something in regards to that? I realize that the judge would make that recommendation, but is it your experience? Would they typically have agreement from both parties to use that process, or would somebody generally be asked to do that when they don't agree with that process?
Mr. Rudy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, as you stated, we would have to have agreement from both parties. Really, it would be up to the judge, but I think if the landowner objected to using this process, the judge would probably make us follow the more traditional process. So, yes, we would anticipate agreement between both parties.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Okay, with that, I will lay Senate File 1525 on the table and anxiously await word from MnDOT that the elements in Sections 6, 7, and 8 have been worked out with an anonymous third party. 1525 is on the table. Thank you, Senator Champion. All right, where's my Senator Kent. Senate File 1461. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I am here today to present Senate File 1461. This was brought to us by the Department of Transportation. This legislation would amend Statute 13.72 to classify data generated by vendors and maintained by MnDOT as non-public from the time of project advertisement until the award, so that contractors can develop project schedules within MnDOT's project management software without the data being public. Once the project is awarded, at that time, all of the data would become public. In an effort to increase efficiencies and provide enhanced services, MnDOT has implemented an enterprise project management system. The system includes tools such as project management and critical path methodologies. To create efficiencies and optimize productivity throughout the project, MnDOT is asking contractors to create construction project schedules prior to the letting date using MnDOT scheduling software. Without this legislation, the scheduling data generated by contractors and provided to MnDOT would be public government data, which would pose a significant competitive disadvantage for contractors if the data is not protected from competitors. This legislation is necessary to ensure that MnDOT continues to receive competitive bids from the greatest number of contractors. And with me today is Peter Zuniga from the Office of General Counsel at the Department of Transportation.
Welcome, Mr. Zuniga.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, right now, when MnDOT requires the critical path method schedule for its projects, the contractors build it into their own scheduling software. Once MnDOT has awarded the project, the contractors have to manually input the schedule into MnDOT system. MnDOT will not allow a simple upload of the file because previous states have run into issues where if there are one corrupt file in that upload, it has potential to bring down the entire system. So we are not willing to take that risk. That manual process can take anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks. So we'd like to eliminate that by having the contractors directly input their schedules into our software. At the point we advertise a project, if we don't have this legislation, the data are presumed to be public and subject to data practices request. And we have some indication from the industry that if their competitors have access to the schedules that they're building into our system, they just won't do it. So that's why we like to classify the data as non-public. But at the point that MnDOT does award the project, all that data would become public.
Thank you. Questions, members? Right. I see the contracting community is in the room. They don't look anxious, so I'll assume they're okay. All right. Senator Kent, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that Senate file 1461 be recommended to, what are we doing, policy?
Pass and sent to judiciary.
Send it to judiciary.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Lucky you. All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Saw Senator Wicklund. Oh, there she is. All right. Senator Wicklund, the intersection of tobacco policy and transportation right here.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have Senate file 1553. It's part of a larger Department of Human Services policy bill. To make it less confusing, we took out some sections from that bill, and we're moving them along through the committees, several committees, kind of in parallel with the larger bill. So for the purposes of this committee, I'd like to highlight there's two sections that are under your jurisdiction. They are Section 1, and I have an amendment that will be for Section 7, or an added section, Section 7, is that correct?
Right.
So the amendment is the A1 amendment.
All right. We'll have the A1 distributed.
And they both relate to the use of unmarked cars. The amendment, it adds language to clarify that not only DHS vehicles are included, but contract vehicles are also included in this identification that's needed. The language was missing, and I don't know, Mr. Carter, do you have more to add to that? So it covers not only DHS vehicles, but those that are conducted by central office staff or county or contract fraud prevention investigators. So that's the amendment.
Okay. Not technically an author's amendment, so I'll entertain questions on the A1. All in favor of the A1 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. All right, Senator Wicklin.
And then, Mr. Chair, the other... Oh, I'm sorry.
Senator Kent made that motion. Senator Wicklin, sorry about that.
That's okay. So, Mr. Chair, the other section that you have jurisdiction over here is the Section 1, and this is an amendment of the Vehicle Registration Chapter of Statute. It allows the Alcohol and Drug Division compliance inspectors to use unmarked vehicles when conducting unannounced tobacco compliance checks. So in current practice, they are going out with marked vehicles to do these unannounced tobacco compliance checks, and that is not the preference. It doesn't make for as good of an experience when the car is marked. So they would like to make this change. And Mr. Carter, I don't know if you want to add more to that. Okay.
Great. Thank you. Senator Tomasoni looks perplexed.
I don't like this one.
I had a hunch.
Are these the kind of what kind of compliance checks are these? Like, Mr. Chairman, Senator Wicklin, are they the kind where they try and trap people into buying cigarettes and then finding them? Is that what they're doing, or what is it?
I'll defer to Mr. Carter from DHS to respond.
Mr. Chair,
welcome.
Mr. Carter from the Department of Human Services.
Welcome, Mr. Carter.
Thank you. Senator Tomasoni, these checks are related to the federal SINAR amendment, so it relates to the selling of, or the prohibition of selling cigarettes to minors. So in a year, we do about almost 7,000 of these checks across the state. They're anonymous. They involve an investigator sending a well-supervised minor into places that are selling cigarettes to ensure that those places are complying with law that minors cannot buy cigarettes.
And the minor looks like he's 25 years old. Is that what normally you do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, I don't know.
Because you could, you know, you would probably get carded, but yeah. I would imagine the people they send in.
All right.
Yeah, I'm not for this.
All right. I'm shocked. All right. Other questions, members? Senator Kiffmeyer.
We're on the bill as a whole, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean the sections under our jurisdictions are 1 and then 7 that we just added, but of course, as we learned in a recent bill hearing, the entire bill is in the purview of the committee.
Unfortunately, mine's on Section 1 anyway, so
okay.
I'm in good shape. All right. I have a little question about lines 4.6 to 4.8, and it may be just that it's unclear here, but it's a rather long sentence, and it says the unmarked vehicles used, and then there's four lines, must be registered and must display passenger vehicle classification license number plates furnished at cost by the registrar. I'm not quite sure what is furnished at cost by the register. You have both plates, and then you have a registration. So just the syntax of that sentence, it is unclear. And then my second thing is, were you expecting the registrar to furnish plates and registration at cost? I'm not sure what that is. And our registrars, a variety of them, some are local-type business people, and other ones are government entities, but I don't know for sure here. So those are my questions in regards to those issues.
So Mr. Carter, and also I know Pat McCormick is here if you need to dial a friend. So Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, from drafting from a DHS perspective, we use parallel construction to the other paragraphs in here. So if someone else is able to speak to the details of that, we just mirrored it after the other paragraph.
Ms. McCormick can help us. Welcome, Ms. McCormick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. We require a $10 plate fee and a $5 administrative fee for all for both undercover and state tax exempt, and that just pays for our costs. So that's a fee that we do charge. So.
And in the circumstance of deputy registrars, I think Senator Kiffmeyer was curious what would happen.
Maybe this
or would they not get these things from deputy registrars?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, members of the committee, my understanding is that this is directly through us that we do the either of these. So
the agency would just work directly with your agency for this process. Okay, great.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Kiffmeyer.
It says by the registrar. If it's DVS, then it should be maybe more clear in that regard. If it said so somewhere else, not a huge thing. Just to be sure that we all know and understand, because if I had a question about it and didn't read it clearly, these are the sort of things that come back later in a bill somewhere.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee and Senator Kiffmeyer, oftentimes registrar is used to mean DVS because our commissioner is considered the registrar in some of the statutory language, but I deferred to Ms. Berezovsky if that's the case in this language or not.
Do you understand that?
Okay.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, I think I understand the question. Whether registrar refers just to the department and not to the deputy registrars? Is that the question?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I think that it, the word registrar is defined as the Department of Public Safety, I think, acting in the driver's license capacity. However, it's often used in such a way that it includes the registrar's deputies. So, but it is used in other places in this section as well, in similar, for example, 4.13, which is current law, furnished by the registrar at cost. So I don't know how it's interpreted in those other paragraphs, if it means the department only.
So, Ms. McCormick, so as it shows up in other places in the statute in this section, I see it on 3.15, and
it's kind of throughout.
Is it well understood to refer to here it is on 3.34. Is it well understood as is to refer only to your agency?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would think that if that's the way it is in this, I don't think the department really has a preference. We know what we're responsible for, and we're still responsible for the deputy registrar's actions as well in terms of oversight. So it doesn't really, it wouldn't be if the committee wants to make a change or whatever the committee believes, it
I'll take that as a yes. Thank you. All right. Anything else, members? Okay, so Senator Kent, you're on a roll here. Would anyone else like to testify first on Senate File 1553 as amended? So Senator Kent moves Senate File 1553 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development. All right.
Thank you.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Right. Well, committee, we're done 5 minutes early. I think that's a world record. So, members, Senator Peterson, we are trying to find evening meetings next week, but okay. This week we weren't able to, so we are going to meet on Friday at 11 a.m., and we have a pretty full list of bills, and we're getting some of your members' bills, so we're working on that today. Anything else? All right, I think that's it.
So, all right, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas.
Is it possible to meet like at 10?
We're bumping into another committee, unfortunately. So if we're as efficient as we were today, it won't be so bad, and everyone can go home. All right. With that, we are adjourned.